we present the News Quiz with your chairman, David Aronovich.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. Simon Hoggart is off for a week and has invested supreme power in me. We start with a clipping from the Hereford Evening News Classifieds, read by Peter Donaldson.
Full set Encyclopaedia Britannica, £5 complete, leather bound as new, no longer required, wife knows everything.
Thanks to Mrs. Maya Curran from Worcestershire for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams, and will you welcome first on my right, the young ones, Francis Ween and Jeremy Hardy. Facing them on my left, the odd couple, Alan Corran and Roy Hattersley. And before we start round one, here's a piece from the West Chiltington Parish Magazine.
Tonight the sermon topic will be, What is Hell? Come early and listen to our choir practice.
Thanks to Mrs. Josephine Ferguson from Pulborough for spotting that one. Francis, which deal might break the bank?
Oh, it's probably this New Deal. They're all being issued with free alarm clocks by the government, young people, to get them out of bed and force them to go to work. But the government is rather short of money for this scheme. They have enough to buy alarm clocks, but not actually enough to provide them with a salary as such. So they're all going to have to go off and work for nothing.
They've cocked up the budgeting, because rather than bring in a programme of public works to get the unemployed to work, they said just to employers is, if you hire people, we'll give you money. And the employer said, what? We just give people jobs as we would normally do. And you give us money. And the government said, yeah, yeah. And the employers thought, this is a bit of a laugh, isn't it? So the employers have all signed up. So all the money is being spent given to bosses to hire people that they probably would have had to hire anyway.
But also Blair himself, he had a reception at Downing Street a few weeks ago for lots of business people who were signing up for the New Deal. And in the course of the evening, it suddenly occurred to him that he said that he himself was an employer, indeed the boss of 10 Downing Street. So he should sign up as well. So he signed up as a New Deal employer. So he is now going to get government money in order to employ Alistair Campbell or some such figure.
All fascinating stuff. It has anything to do with the question?
Yes, it is. They've answered it.
They've answered it.
You've woken up. You have the old deal.
All right, well, this is indeed the government's New Deal for the jobless, which was this week reported to be running into financial problems. In its initial stage, the scheme provides literacy and numeracy courses in a phase called Entering the Gateway. Those who fail at both disciplines are immediately given suitable work placements in a phase called Entering the Safeway. Jeremy, how did the Sun King cast a cloud over Auntie?
Rupert Murdoch, and he's been attacking the BBC for being rather sharky operators who seek to dominate parts of the media, and him being a great believer in a free and diverse media has been attacking the BBC. Also, he's been attacking the government, which looks to me like a put-up job, because all last week we were hearing about how Blair was phoning up the Italian Prime Minister and doing his dirty work for Murdoch, and then this week he's attacking him. Attacking the government, and I think Blair's just said, go on, hit me, go on, talk dirty to me, go on.
I'm going to tell you something you won't believe. I've had a letter...
Not for the first time, I tell you. Well,
I've had a letter from the head of public relations at Wapping, a lady, who says I ought to stop attacking Rupert Murdoch because he has no means of defending himself.
This does indeed refer to Alan's employer, Rupert Murdoch, the media mogul, who may be going for world domination, but at least he gets the papers to arrive on time. Roy, which speaker spoke out against speaking off the record?
This is a great Mrs. Betty Boothroyd, sometime Tiller girl, who believes that the Labour Party should make its announcements in the House of Commons rather than late at night to newspapers, thus re-establishing constitutional precedent and destroying all that Peter Mandelson stands for. And she's right and they're wrong, and I can't keep attacking the Labour Party all the time. It's becoming a habit. Alan ought to defend them. He's a Tory, so he ought to defend the Labour government.
No, I'd like a question instead. I don't know. I've got to get home. The children are growing up.
It was indeed Betty Boothroyd who rebuked government spin doctors for leaking information as a way of getting around correct procedure. Alan, a piece of music for you. Alan, who isn't in opposition to living in sin?
Oh, it's the Mekon, isn't it? It's Little Hague, who says that people should live together before they're married. He's been very quiet since he's been married. Perhaps he doesn't believe they should live together afterwards. He made a new policy statement for new Conservatives, which says that before people get married, they should just try things out. Rather like politics, isn't it, Roy?
I didn't quite catch that, sorry.
I'll try your good side. Before you become the leader of anything, you should actually try it out.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
If you say so.
He's very compliant. He never used to be like that.
The question referred to William Hague, who surprised the Tories by recommending that couples should live in sin before getting married, as in fact he himself did with his lovely Fion. True to their principles, Mr. Hague and Fion caused quite a stir at Brighton last year when they openly shared a double bed. That'll be the last time they're allowed in Debenhams. And the scores at the end of round one are Francis and Jeremy 4, Alan and Roy 4. We start round two with a headline from The Observer.
Cut price airlines may be good news for travellers, but they can't all survive.
Thanks to R. Fisher of London for sending that in. Francis, who has to go-go to court at his convenience?
George, Michael. I think he's been charged under his real name.
J. Arthur Rank.
He was caught sort of doing a Hugh Grant, except there was no woman involved, and indeed no man involved, really. I mean, it was an entirely part of his solo career. I mean, he was alone in a public lavatory, affronting public decency, or so they allege.
Do the joke. Do the joke.
Oh, all right. The policeman said, "You've got to come quietly, sir."
The Times called this a homosexual act, which I suppose it is, in as much as if you're a man having sex on your own, you're having sex with a man, in as much as it's more of a monosexual act.
Right?
It was called, the American police said he was performing a lewd act, but in the Hugh Grant case, the lewd act was
performed by divine hands.
Was not involving hands. And I'm wondering whether George Michael has a flexibility and a dimension that we know not of. Terrible way to be found when you put your back out, I'll tell you that.
It is rather an odd situation where you can be arrested for unzipping your trousers in a men's toilet.
Well, it's just as well this isn't applied in the areas around the White House in Washington, D.C.
This is Clinton's...
Or Clinton would be down the cop shop every evening, actually.
This is the new three shakes and you're out policy, obviously.
The Beverly Hills policeman alleged that he was in an adjoining cubicle when Mr. Michael pushed a foot under the door, which is nothing if not impressive. The pop star's London agent has confirmed the incident but refused to comment further, saying he didn't want to put George in an awkward position. Jeremy, why are battery farmers far from in excelsis?
Oh, yeah, eggs are as good for
curry
you.
Business.
Yeah, eggs are as good for you today as they've always been. Yes,
that's it?
Yes. There's as much salmonella as there was when Edwina Curry made her desperate bid for fame.
Salmonella.
Some people say salmonella, don't they? Because the first part of it looks like salmon. They do. Whereas, of course, it was Salmon Dave.
This is the news that one in every 600 eggs is infected with salmonella. The new crisis has drawn comparisons with the 1989 outbreak, as a result of which 2 million suspect birds got slaughtered. A bit like Ladies' Night at Stringfellow's. Roy, here's a piece of music for you. Roy, what will be out of control and up in the air if what goes down?
Oh, I hoped it was livery confusion.
Yes.
We were sure it was livery confusion. The air controllers say that the money spent on providing air control is so inadequate that we're all in danger of crashing when we land, which is the right answer, but it isn't half as interesting as livery confusion.
It also has the virtue of only being half the right answer.
Well, it's about the system they plan to install is already outdated.
Four years behind the times, and there isn't enough money for it.
Don't tease. You're not George Michael. Either it is or it isn't.
This is all about the new air traffic control computer that's said to be the wrong machine for the job of coordinating airlines. Reports say it lacks sufficient capacity, ignores basic user requirements, and is also massively late in arriving. But they didn't say how it was the wrong machine for airlines. Alan, who doesn't want you to DIE when you DIY?
Yes. It's Rossbach, I think. Every Easter, this is a topical question, every Easter, people flood out in droves and go and worship at their local DIY centres. And they come back and they climb up ladders and they fall off. And they plug in their new Black & Deckers and take off their left leg. And they rewire the house and the children get barbecued. It's an extremely dangerous practice. Everybody is doing do-it-yourself. It's something like one in every seven people is dead by the time he gets the car unpacked. It's an extremely dangerous thing. Do-it-yourself, as George Michael found out.
This is the new government advertising campaign aimed at reducing DIY injuries. It's specially timed to coincide with the Easter weekend, which is a peak time for DIY, presumably because Easter is associated with miracles, so it's as good a time as any to try and assemble that MFI cabinet. And the scores at the end of round two are Francis and Jeremy, 8, and Alan and Roy, 8. Francis, who produced art for artifice's sake?
I think it's Mr. William Boyd, the novelist, and David Bowie, or possibly Bowie, and Sir Tim Sainsbury, of all people, former Tory MP, who perpetrated what they thought was a hoax, in that Will Boyd wrote a spoof biography of an artist called Nat Tate, an American artist of the 50s, and they had a big launch party in New York, at which all the modern art collectors and poseurs of New York gathered at a fashionable gallery. And they were then triumphant. They said, we fooled them all. They were all walking around saying, oh, yes, Nat Tate, he was awfully good, wasn't he? Whereas, in fact, he didn't exist. But it seemed to me it could have been a double bluff. But all these guests at the party said, were thinking to themselves, we know perfectly well there's no such person, but why don't we try and hoax David Bowie into thinking that we have been conned by this? So they were saying, oh, yes, we remember Nat Tate very well. So I think they emerged triumphant, actually, the New York art establishment, yet again, over what seemed to be a completely hopeless hoax. It was named Nat after National Gallery and Tate after Tate Gallery. So I think they did spot it, really, these people.
But do any of us really exist? And what do we mean when we say exist?
Indeed, really? It's hyper-reality and postmodernism meeting the metafactual correlative.
I like it when you talk dirty.
The name Nat Tate may be derived from London's two most prominent galleries, the National and the Tate. Organisers did consider inventing a name based on the Louvre and the National Gallery of Portugal, but decided that no one would believe in an artist called Portaloo. Jeremy, here's your piece of music. Welcome home. Jeremy, who was welcomed home after turning on a turner?
Yeah, this is your woman. It could be you. Who does that ridiculous thing where they take money from gullible people who live in vain hope of their lives being improved. And she was shagging somebody, and then he's gone back to his wife. Who said satire was ever alive?
But it is exactly that story, isn't it? It's just a succession of sort of rather obscure people who apparently appear on television at odd times of the day, or sort of breakfast shows, or on cable sex and shopping channels and things.
It's all bonus balls, isn't it, really?
I had a fan letter from Anthea Turner once.
You had a fan letter from Anthea Turner?
And I'm really sure I'd never seen on television, but I did get a fan letter from her. It was very sweet, though. She has that sort of schoolgirl writing where they, you know, they put things inside the letters, and they're all very rounded, and you put little crosses inside the letters, and XXX at the end. It said, "Dear Francis, thank you, !! Love, Anthea." I had no idea who this woman was. And it was because I made a rude remark about some chap called Bruno Brooks. Does he still work here?
This was the earth-shattering news that it hasn't worked out between Lottery Queen Anthea Turner and her lover, Grant Bovey. Mr. Bovey has returned to his wife Della, saying he knew he'd made a terrible mistake when all Anthea could offer him was a weekly rollover. Roy, which way is more watery than milky?
Oh, this is Mars. They found water on Mars. And, well, they found water on one of those stars out there. And the fact that there's water means there might be human life. And we're all delighted about it, because it might be better than here.
Well, it's the universe is wet. I mean, it's just, you get a bit beyond Endon and it's just wet. Right up to what we relativists call the end of the universe. Every corner. Soaking.
This indeed the news that planet-sized quantities of water have been discovered in distant space, a quite incredible achievement for science considering that they can't even find a few gallons in Yorkshire. Alan, how did an illustrious affair sail into hot water?
I love this. I love this. It's Lieutenant Commander Popel and Lieutenant Thing Pierce. And the thing about the illustrious, it runs quite quietly. It's like run silent, run deep. And they had this vigorous affair. And she's very noisy when the mood takes her. And he was asked in court how they kept this from the rest of the ship. And he said, "We would wait until the Harriers took off." Now, this guy is very good. His timing is terrific. I mean, a lot of us could learn from this. Because the Harrier's not up there long. And he's got to hit the button as the Harrier takes off. Unless he was in a position to command when the Harriers took off. In which case, if they really fancied, can you imagine the Russians or whoever sitting up there saying, "My God, those bloody Harriers are going up and down." gave a whole new idea, you know, the idea of jump jets and vertical takeoff and all those things. And there was a wonderful piece in his evidence. On Armistice Day in 1996, he was supposed to have been at a helicopter conference in Warminster, but he was with his mistress. But he said, this without any humour at all, "We did observe the 2 minutes silence." Absolutely true. They're all absolutely barking, these people. You'd actually think, wouldn't you, they would interview her and say, "Are you one of the noisy ones?" Because this is our only aircraft carrier. I've seen those films where John Mills says, "Stop all engines," because of the enemy. And you do that, and suddenly there'd be this shriek from the scuppers. And the Germans be on you like ferrets.
And the scores at the end of round three are Francis and Jeremy 12 and Alan and Roy 12. Francis, here's your piece of music.
Jimmy Grant goes to America. Many hello in America. Nobody knows in America. Puerto Rico's in America.
Who has been going gaga in America?
This isn't another George Michael question, surely to goodness. Hasn't he suffered enough?
Little clue?
Tell us.
Oh, Teletubbies.
Yes,
oh, it's
sorry.
Dinky well. Winky, Dipsy, Lala and Poe, and indeed Nunu, the vacuum cleaner, have gone to America. They're appearing on PBS now.
Why have they gone gaga, though?
They don't say gaga, the Teletubbies. They say eh-oh, and they say big hugs.
Time for tubby custard.
Time for tubby bye-byes. Oh, Poe burnt the tubby toast.
How does he ever find any time to work?
But Americans are very reluctant to take Teletubbies because they said it was an insult to the intelligence of American TV viewers. From the nation that gave us the mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Well, they have to dub the Teletubbies because they don't understand the accent. It will cause confusion because Winky in America means a gentleman's front bottom. And Poe means a writer of Gothic horror stories.
Dipsy is a lewd act, I believe.
Jeremy, how was winning a driving test? No joke.
Oh, questions, questions, questions. I don't know.
No, just tell us. Go on. No clues.
Give
just
us
get
a
on.
Clue.
Tell
no,
us.
Do some charades.
Tell us, I'm dying. No, come on. It's all right for them. They got young prostates. Tell me.
She's not a prostate. She's my young niece. I just bought her a flat because she's going to university in central London. That's all.
This is... This is about cars that have proved to be popular.
Not the Skoda. Ah! Oh,
take it, Big Al.
What a complicated story. You know this. The Skoda has turned out to be the car everybody most loves. It used to be a bit of a joke. You know, they used to say, what's the difference between a Skoda and a golf ball? You can drive a golf ball 200 yards. What do you call an open-top Skoda? It's a skip. No, you've got to stop all that now because it's the most loved car in the world and everything else, Vauxhalls and Fords and all the rest right down the bottom. And it's ever since Volkswagen took over the Skoda company. Just proves what happens when the Germans march into Czechoslovakia. It's always a good thing.
The answer is indeed that Skoda cars have been voted the all-round most popular make in a customer poll, with such luxury names as Jaguar and BMW languishing in fourth and sixth places. In second place was the Subaru Impreza, scoring 98% as a shopping car and 127% as a Scrabble hand. Roy, what will go down badly if it goes down again?
Well, the Titanic, I guess, where they've discovered that the steerage class passengers were not locked in before they started off. I don't know, do you know?
A couple of twerps are building a new one. Or not a couple of twerps, I think an American-Swedish company are building a new Titanic.
That's what I said.
You wouldn't buy a ticket, would you?
After its maiden Atlantic voyage, the Titanic 2 will be marketed as a luxury ferry. Be sure to watch out for special offers, including free car wash. Alan, which Mites Ma might be at her wit's end?
Mites Ma. So it's a small person's mother at her wit's end. I have not the faintest idea. Have you got any idea?
Of course not. No.
Come on.
Of course.
What? Come on, Roy, spread your wisdom.
It's not the child not who eats nothing but Marmite sandwiches, is it?
Oh, well done. Yes.
The kid's called... Why has this Marmite-eating child, who lives on Marmite sandwiches, has done ever since went on to solid food, is now, I think, 12 years old, something like that, has never eaten anything else except for occasionally a slice of toast with Marmite on it instead, and is perfectly well-nourished, fit and well. It turns out Marmite is a complete diet.
I should think your cheque from the company is in the post even now, isn't it?
It's just attention, that's all it is. All these things kids do, and then they go to somebody else's. He'll go to somebody else's house and he'll have guacamole starter, and then he'll have Thai, red curry, chicken curry, and then followed by, liver sausage and mandarin roulade. And a whole chocolate-covered raw elk, and then he'll come home and... If you want to draw attention to yourself, hold your breath until you faint, you little sod.
This is 11-year-old Daniel Parks, who lives on a diet of Marmite sandwiches. By a strange coincidence, Daniel's pet dog suffers from a similar compulsion. The family have been trying to stop it eating only Alphabetti spaghetti, as it keeps leaving little messages around the house. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
David, this is from the Melbourne Herald, and it's very good, I think, because the standard question journalists ask anyone who is in the news, whether they've had their entire family wiped out by a serial killer or they've just swum the channel, is, how do you feel? And there is an answer to it. And at last, someone has stood up to this tyranny. An Englishman who lost an arm and a leg to a landmine 2 years ago has completed a 200-kilometre run from Bathurst to Sydney to raise money for fellow victims of the deadly weapons. Asked how he felt, Chris Moon replied, like a one-legged man who has just run 200 kilometres.
Jeremy.
This is an advert from the Cumberland News, and this company is looking for a full-time inseminator. And it says, for their business and expanding AI service, applicants should have an interest in cattle breeding and have a strong desire to serve the company's customers in a professional and courteous manner.
Roy.
I know you wanted to be succinct on this programme, David, so I got a headline which I think maximises meaning in a minimum amount of words from the Telegraph. Cowboy rabbi in nude bar urged to quit.
Alan.
Well, I have a poignant gobbet, David, from the Stoke Evening Sentinel. There's William Gaunt, a young Stoke engineer on a six-month appointment in Papua New Guinea, wrote two letters a day to his Burslem girlfriend, Patsy Reynolds. Last Sunday, in All Saints Church, Lotsford, she married the postman.
Well, thank you all. And now, let's look at the final scores. Francis and Jeremy have 16. Alan and Roy have 16. But before we leave you, here's a cutting from the museum's journal sent in by an anonymous Wiltshire listener.
A correspondent who sent a hominid skull to the Smithsonian Institute in Washington received a polite reply, disagreeing with his theory that it offered conclusive proof of the presence of early man in Charleston County 2 million years ago. It appears that what you have found is the head of a Barbie doll, of the variety one of our staff believes to be Malibu Barbie. A curator wrote, adding, we're also interested in hearing your theories on the transpositating filification of ferrous ions in structural matrix that makes the juvenile Tyrannosaurus rex femur you discovered take on the deceptive appearance of a rusty 9mm Sears Craftsman automotive crescent wrench.
Well, that's all for this week. Until the next time, goodbye.
Taking part in News Quiz this week were Francis Wheen, Jeremy Hardy, Roy Hattersley and Aaron Corrigan. The chairman was David Aronovich and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson and Hugh Rycroft. The producer was John Rolfe.